Welcome to the CDH Conversations podcast. My name is Aniba Saidnet and I'm a director in CDH's Employment Law Department. Today I'm joined by Leila Musa, a senior associate in our Employment Law Department. Hi, Leila.
Thank you, Anli, and welcome to all our listeners.
Today, Leila and I will be discussing an employment-related concept, which is deceptively simple, but has been in the news recently due to some major shakeups. Our topic is the certificates of compliance, what they are, why they are important, and how an harassment award can prove fatal to any attempt to obtain one. To help us unpack this, let me ask the first question, which all of our listeners probably have, and that is, what is a certificate of compliance, Leila?
So the Certificate of Compliance is an official document that's issued by the Minister of Employment and Labour, and it confirms that an employer has complied with the relevant provisions of the Employment Equity Act. Now, Section 53 of that Employment Equity Act makes this certificate essential if an employer wants to enter into any agreement with an organ of state. So whether you're supplying goods or providing services or leasing equipment. And significantly, it applies to both designated and non-designated employers in terms of the Employment Equity Act. So this means that it applies to all employers in some way or another. And the certificate itself is treated as conclusive proof of compliance. So if you don't have it as an employer, the state may simply reject your offer automatically or cancel an agreement that's already been concluded.
So essentially, the certificate tells the Department of Employment and Labor and any state institution that you as an employer are an ethical and equitable employer and eligible to do business with the state. So it's proof of your general compliance with employment equity requirements and obligations in terms of the Employment Equity Act. It also confirms that you have not received an adverse finding by the CCMA or a court within the previous 12 months that the employer breached the prohibition of unfair discrimination in Chapter 2 of the Employment Equity Act. And it confirms that the CCMA has not issued an award against the employer in the previous 12 months for failing to pay the minimum wage in terms of the National Minimum Wage Act of 2018. So it sounds straightforward, but the consequences are massive. The next big question then is, why is the certificate so important? And why does Section 53 change the game for employers?
Well, Anli, it's because for the first time, the Employment Equity Act is tying compliance, so employment compliance, directly to an employer's eligibility to engage in state procurement. So in terms of the Section 53 of the Employment Equity Act, if you're a designated employer, you must comply with both Chapter 2 and 3 of the Employment Equity Act, so that is the prohibition against unfair discrimination, and then also the affirmative action provisions in the Employment Equity Act. And if you're a non-designated employer, you must comply at least with the prohibition against unfair discrimination. Now, if an employer can't prove that compliance through either a certificate or a declaration, the tender or the contract must be rejected or potentially cancelled. And while the Employment Equity Act allows for either a certificate or a declaration, the regulations in terms of that act only provide operational detail for how the certificate is actually acquired. The implementation of and the verification process for declarations is unclear, and that remains largely untested. Now, that uncertainty is why most employers are opting to actually just go for the certificate route. In other words, now, if you don't have the certificate, you're simply just not going to have a contract with the state.
So let's make this practical. How does an employer actually apply for a compliance certificate under Section 53?
So these applications are made electronically on the Department of Employment and Labor's website using what we call the EEA 15 form. And the certificate can only be issued if certain conditions are met. And these are in line with those that you just mentioned earlier.
So for non-designated employers, the minister must be satisfied that in the past 12 months there was no CCMA ruling or award. And for designated employers, you must meet the same criteria in addition to your obligations to comply with the Employment Equity Act relating to employment equity obligations and reporting measures. Now, here's the question employers really need answered. Why can an harassment award or other adverse finding become an obstacle to obtaining a certificate of compliance?
Well, in practice, we're actually seeing this to be one of the most misunderstood issues, but it's really crucial. Now, harassment is a form of unfair discrimination in terms of the Employment Equity Act. And an arbitration award that relates to harassment or any finding of unfair discrimination will directly affect eligibility for the Certificate of Compliance. Now, under Section 53(6) of the Employment Equity Act, both designated and non-designated employers can be barred from receiving a compliance certificate if the CCMA or a court has issued a finding of unfair discrimination, and that would include workplace harassment, or if an award is issued for a failure to pay the minimum wage. So if an employer or even a manager who acts within the scope of employment is the subject of such a finding or award, the minister cannot issue the compliance certificate. So what this means is that something like an harassment award, which employers may, you know, in their minds, confined to a private disciplinary issue, it can now have this larger business consequence and stop your entire organization from contracting with the state. So in short, harassment is not just an HR or human capital issue anymore. It's one that forms part of your procurement and business risk.
So Leila, before we close, I want to address something proactive, which is many employers listening might be wondering, what can we actually do to reduce the risk of receiving an harassment award in the first place? Because as we've seen, even one finding can derail the ability to obtain a compliance certificate. And before we get to that, I do think we just need to make the point that employers always need to be aware of the fact that an arbitration award can be taken on review. And strictly speaking, in terms of Section 145 of the Labor Relations Act, if you furnish security, it suspends the implementation of that award. So a review application is always a possibility. It's something that I would recommend be strongly considered in instances where that may affect your compliance award being issued. And it could also be a potential ground on which to engage with the Department of Employment and Labor as to a reason why the Certificate of Compliance must nevertheless be issued. But in addition to that, Leila, what can employers do to avoid finding themselves in this position?
Yeah, so I think the starting point there is that employers are reminded that they have this obligation to prevent and eliminate harassment in the workplace. And now we're seeing that preventing harassment is more than just this compliance and potentially trying to avoid liability, but it's also going to tie directly to their ability to operate, tender, and contract with the state. Now, fortunately, you can significantly reduce this risk if you take a structured and preventative approach. And some of the key measures would include, firstly, implementing a strong anti-harassment policy. Now, this is required in terms of our law. You should have one in place. But ensuring that it's clear, legally compliant, and significantly that it's communicated very clearly to all of your employees and those who interact with your business. You should ensure that it's very clear what harassment is. It's set out how does one actually report harassment and practically how does one go about that. So who do you send it to? What's the format it must take? What are the timelines? There should also be a guarantee in relation to non-retaliation for complaints. One should also outline what are the investigation steps so that people who are engaging in these processes feel the comfort that they know what will happen next and how it will be dealt with. And also set out what the potential disciplinary consequences are for persons who are potentially the subject of these complaints. Now, when I spoke about it being clearly communicated, we know that practically these policies only work if employees actually understand it, if they trust it, and significantly, if they see that it's being applied consistently. That will allow them to trust that this process will see to their potential issue or claim without them potentially having to resort to going to a forum such as the CCMA with their issue. So where this is particularly vague or outdated, an employer is going to increase their risk of having their policy enforceable and ensuring that it's going to have the desired effect of reducing potential complaints and liability. And then tied into that, when an employer has implemented this policy and ensured that it is clearly communicated, it's important that it also is coupled with training and that employees are potentially having regular anti-harassment training, refresher sessions during onboarding or promotion or team restructures, and then also potentially manager-specific training that focuses on early intervention. What do you do when you receive a complaint? What are the elements of confidentiality I need to consider? And how does one actually escalate a matter or seek assistance if you are unsure? not everyone is a specialist in HR or in labor matters. And the nature and extent of how this harassment training should look would definitely depend on the needs of the employer's workplace. So a well-trained workforce is statistically less likely to generate the kinds of disputes that end up as CCMA unfair discrimination findings, and which may result in issues such as the harassment awards we spoke about today.
Thanks for that, Leila, and thanks for joining me today. Thank you also to the listeners, and we hope that you have found this useful.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.